This is the first time that we're actually doing this live. So we're taking the show on the road. We've only been around for a little bit under 2 months. And we're just picking up a lot of steam, so we're very excited to have the opportunity to be able to do this show for all of you. So let's go ahead and give a nice big round of applause for David Leventhal.
Mosh pit.
Thank you. Really.
Thank you. Thanks for catching me. Thanks for having my back. Really, it was great. I know I can count on you. That's a tough act to follow, but Gideon, thank you for not getting blood on the floor. Okay, he'd probably slip. Welcome to our first live Forward Nation radio show. That's right. Give it up for yourself. When I say live, I am, of course, referring to you, most of you. I'm live for most of the shows. Not all, but most of the shows. I hope you're enjoying yourselves. Tough act to follow. Hope you're enjoying the music. Had a tough moment I got to share for before we started. Okay, there were requests for the music that we're going to use for the show. And they said, we want stuff that's loud, buoyant, exciting, gets people up. And I said, cool, I got that. And they said, and modern. Thought you'd like that one. And I said, if it comes out in a year that starts with a 19, does that count? I was told no, to my disappointment. Although I came out to a song that started with 19. Turns out it wasn't as big a problem as we thought it was going to be. Because everything old is new again. We're in a nostalgia craze, right? We're all stuff that your parents liked. In your case, maybe your grandparents for some of you. Things that your grandparents liked are back in vogue, including some of the music. Nostalgia's in. My mother ruined my life. My brother, by the way, has also ruined my life. But that's not relevant here to the story. My mother ruined my life. Okay, it's not a psychology set. I'm not asking for your help. She didn't actually ruin my life. She just completely squashed my financial fortune and future. How did she do that? She threw away all the shit I'd accumulated in her basement for decades. Baseball cards. Back before there was an American League. Okay, not really that far back. Okay, thought you'd like that one. Comic books from way back when. Sports Illustrated from before Sports Illustrated was actually a magazine. Swimsuit issues going back, every swimsuit issue going back to where the women were wearing clamshells. Okay, that was actually 3 years ago. So, but they were wearing clamshells because it was really the only thing they had available to wear. And all these old things packed away in my mother's basement. My mother's a neat freak. She threw it all out. There goes my, so now I'm doing this. There goes the financial future from just selling stuff that's back in vogue. This is, I guess, the brilliance, the evil, evil brilliance of Make America Great Again. Make America Great Again. Builds on the whole nostalgia thing. Whatever time in the past you thought was wonderful, real or imagined. Stuff you didn't live through. all of a sudden, these memories are evoked and all these positive thoughts come through. Doesn't really matter what it is, you can fill in your own time. I've spent the last few months doing a lot of things, but in one case, I'm trying to figure out, what does he mean? When was America great? Those of you who heard me speak before realize that I think for most Trump supporters, great was sometime pre-Enlightenment, before science, reason, facts mattered. But I'm guessing that you know, and probably somebody in the Trump administration knows, that there wasn't a United States back then. I mean, for some of them, of course, Make America Great Again refers to when Jesus discovered America. But for most of us, it still won't work. So when was America great? What time are we hearkening back to? Well, we've got the Founding Fathers, of course. We always revere the Founding Fathers. We just installed a Supreme Court justice who believes in at least some form of originalism. Don't change what the founders intended. Whatever they were thinking, that's good enough for now. Whatever worked in 1789 or 1776 is good enough for now. Is that really when America was so great? Are we going back to the late 18th century? People use their own teeth for toothpicks. Wooden teeth. White powdered wigs. Have you seen the way they dressed? This was not a good time. Not only that, but at the time this country was being founded, we had a lot of immigration. That's right, all those black people were immigrating in the hulls of ships. Really? Ben Carson? Nobody? Nobody Ben Carson. Okay. Look it up. You'll think that's funny. There has to be a better time. We had slaves. Some people might have thought that that was a good thing, but I don't think when the president's talking about making America great again that he's appealing to most Americans by talking about times when we owned human beings. So that lets out everything before the Civil War. Okay, after the Civil War? Well, we can forget the late 1800s. Why? Because we've all forgotten the late 1800s. Nobody knows anything about the late 1800s. So let's just forget about the late 1800s. Let's go into the 1900s. When was America so great? The 1920s? The Roaring 20s? Great Gatsby? Well, income inequality was pretty high, which certainly appeals to Trump supporters or the Trump base. Perhaps that was good. But we had prohibition in the 20s. Alcohol was illegal. Probably not a time most Americans are looking back on fondly when we talk about Make America Great. I'm guessing some of the people in this room would have looked back to that. I'm now guessing more of the people in this room would not be looking back so fondly to the 1920s as a wonderful time. Besides, the 1920s led to the 1930s. And the 1930s was the Great Depression. Not a good time in America. How do I know that? Well, I just lived through another version of it. Thank you for not yelling out, you lived through the original version of it. I appreciate that, that discretion on your part. But we just lived through a Great Recession, which was the worst economic situation since the Great Depression. We have a pretty good idea that things were not good. So it's probably not the 1930s. The 1940s, we could pretty much just rule that out, right? It's not the 1940s. 1940s, some of you may know, was World War II. Not great times in America. We were losing many Americans going abroad to fight. Not so great in the 1940s. Well, the 1950s is often seen as a time that Republicans look back on fondly. Certainly Trump's people. The 1950s. A time when father knew best. Not mother. Thank you, a couple of older people in the audience who actually got that. Go ask your parents, the rest of you. A time when father knew best. Dad went off to work. Mom waited for him when he got home with his dinner ready, his slippers, his 2.2 children, nicely fed, whatever else. Okay, father, of course, was white, which might bother some of us and might be a time that we're not looking back on fondly. That may not necessarily be true of so many people who supported Trump. And maybe that's not something that we want to be proud of. Very white. Okay, but other stuff in the 1950s may not have been so great. I'm expecting there are some people of color in this room. Not necessarily a great time for people of color. Not that Make America Great Again is designed to appeal to black people or anybody else who has a darker skin tone than I do. But nevertheless, the 1950s, not necessarily so great. And here's one that Trump and the Republicans will not be happy with. Top income tax rate in the 1950s, 91%. 91%. Okay, so I think we could pretty much rule out the 1950s as the time he's looking back on fondly. What about the 1960s? Okay. Yeah, says the guy born in the 1990s. Okay, but the 1960s, yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, the 1960s, I don't think they're talking about that. Okay, this is not about Woodstock. I think if you asked a Trump supporter or a Republican, when are we making America great again? Let's go back to Woodstock. People should be using more acid. People probably are using more acid, actually, but it's been refined since then. The 1960s, we had the Vietnam War. We had college students being murdered by National Guardsmen at Kent State University. We had, I don't know, the decade of the assassination in the 1960s. We lost a lot of leaders. We had a Democratic convention that turned to riots. Let's be serious. Republicans do not look back fondly on the 1960s, so we really should move on from there. The 1970s. Well, that's kind of like the late 1800s. Nobody looks back fondly on the 1970s. That was stagflation, Jimmy Carter. For a while, the economy wasn't so great for much of the 70s. We were still early in the 70s struggling with the Vietnam War. Can't be the 70s. 1980s, okay, now maybe we're onto something. The 1980s were, shall we all say it together? Ronald Reagan, the god of the Republican Party. Do I look like my voice is dry? Sound like my voice is dry? I wonder what that message is. Ronald Reagan, the Jesus of the Republican Party, was the 1980s. It was good times for a little while, because we were running up everything on the credit card. It's true. You want a suggestion to live well, to improve your life? Take out as many credit cards as you possibly can and max them all out. Spend the limit on every credit card. You'll have a couple of pretty good months. And if you're the president, you'll probably have left office by the time the bills are due. And then you'll leave it to your successor to be a one-term president, trying to deal with your mess. That being said, under Ronald Reagan, we had the biggest deficits to that point this country had ever faced, putting all the money on the credit card. There were several things about the Reagan administration that didn't necessarily fit with the ideal of Ronald Reagan as Jesus reincarnated. But Jesus kind of was reincarnated, I guess, sort of, or not really reincarnated, but you get the idea. Ronald Reagan in 1986 signed the largest tax increase in American history. Once again, taxes. We're not really talking about such wonderful times. In the 1980s, we had the Marine barracks attack, the second most successful terrorist incident against the United States. Hundreds of Marines lost their lives in Lebanon. It was so tragic that we had to withdraw our troops from Lebanon and declare war on Grenada, an island in the Caribbean housing American medical students who couldn't get into American medical schools, US medical schools, and apparently a few people wearing red. And so we invaded Grenada to deflect attention from the fact that we lost a lot of Marines in Lebanon. Okay, we can do this as an exercise that's hopefully kind of fun, doing this. Obviously, you can't be taking him literally. Make America great again is an ideal. It's not about anything. It's a marketing scheme. It makes you feel good about things. Looking back on a past that never existed, but that doesn't really matter, because in your minds it exists. It exists in your minds, and since it happened before, it can happen again. And since it happened before, it probably won't take any effort on your part to make it happen again. It's brilliant marketing. Evil brilliance, but brilliant marketing. Give them credit, the Republicans are good at marketing. I'd like to talk for a little while about the fake news, the information, misinformation that you encounter every day in your life. Republicans know how to brand. They know how to come up with great slogans. But marketing is a big part of your life, whether you know it or not. Commercialism is what runs the country. We sell stuff, we buy stuff. You're exposed to advertising everywhere you go, and lots of it. Children see thousands of television ads on average every year. Thousands. Most of them for products we try to keep away from our children. You face advertisements everywhere you go, because people are trying to sell stuff. The problem for advertisers is there's overload. You guys get advertised everywhere you go, you become immune to it a little bit. You stop seeing the ads. It's just background noise. So how do you address that problem if you're trying to market to people? How do you address the fact that people turn away from ads? Well, the first thing you do is you make your ads appear in places that people are not used to seeing ads. Okay, who deserves to be rich aside from the guy who created the potato chip? The guy or gal who first had the thought to put advertisements in front of urinals or in above urinals. Okay, this is a joke that maybe the guys will appreciate more than the women. But women, if you've ever been in a men's bathroom, and you know some of you have, if you've ever been in a men's bathroom, okay, you got these urinals. You have to stand up at the urinal, and you stand there and do your business at the urinal. And there's a row of guys doing it, like cattle or something at a trough. Something like that. It's kind of a weird scene, especially when you get the long ones. Okay, and you have to understand that as a guy, okay, as a guy, you can't look anywhere other than directly at the wall in front of you. Okay, it's just it doesn't really. Hey, how's it going? Yeah, it's good. Okay, that's quite a flow you got going there. It's good. Okay. Look at the size of these ads. It's another Trump joke. Okay, so your eyes have to be somewhere else. They have to be glued to right in front of you. So whoever thought to put ads in front, it's great, because you prefer to read the ads. And now they have the screen that rotates because of technology. So you can have lots of ads in case you're peeing for a really long time, I guess. Okay, you maybe have seen ads in toilet stalls. in case you forgot to bring your newspaper in, at gas stations. Thought that one was kind of brilliant. You stand there pumping gas, what are you doing? You're standing there pumping gas, you might as well watch TV. Someone had the idea of putting it on the Mir space station so that when we got pictures of the space shuttle docking with Mir, we'd see, I don't know, Fritos or something. Are they a sponsor? Not yet. Okay. If we had a sponsor, I would have used that one. We don't have a sponsor yet. So find new places to put ads so people will actually see them. But that's not good enough either. Because Americans are wise enough to not believe what they see in a TV commercial. We understand that just because they tell us that Burger King hamburgers, also not a sponsor, that Burger King, this is not an ad I'm about to talk to you about, Burger King hamburgers are the best hamburgers on the planet. You see a commercial like that, and most of you think, wow, most of you don't think, I guess, wow, I better go out and buy a Burger King hamburger. I mean, they're the best. You understand when you're being sold to. You don't necessarily trust the used car salesman. You don't trust the new car salesman. You know they're trying to sell you something, so their message becomes less effective. Your guard goes up when someone's trying to sell you something. So what's the next step in being effective in getting people to change their behavior, in advertising to people, and getting people to buy stuff? The next step, of course, is to make sure that people don't understand they're being sold to. People don't understand it's an ad. So if we had a commercial break during our show and we said, buy Firestone tires. I didn't plan any of this, by the way. I have no idea why these things are coming into my head. But they're coming into my head. Buy Firestone tires. You'd look at it, you'd see it's an ad, and you'd think, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. But if I walk up here and say, I got here safely today despite some really tough weather and some really bad road conditions. I thought I was going to lose it for a little while. Car stopped short in front of me. I was about to go into a skid. Turns out my Firestone tires saved me. Wow, they're good tires. I go on TV. I get interviewed by Stephen Colbert. Sorry, it's a dream. I get interviewed by Stephen Colbert. Stephen says, Dave, you're looking good. You're looking better than I remember you. You seem less agitated than you were the last few times I see you. And I say, well, Steve, ever since I started on Prozac, I've been feeling a lot better. My life's been better. Walk off stage, collect my money from whoever the hell makes Prozac, and I think, I wouldn't eat this shit. But that becomes more effective. Because you think it's honest. You think someone's speaking honestly to you the truth. You may not necessarily agree with it, but you at least you know that it's not bought and paid for. Well, this is where we've gotten in our society. People are constantly selling you shit without letting you know that they're selling you shit. This is what we see all the time now. Instead of commercials during TV shows, because after all, you now have remote controls, you have DVRs, you might skip the commercials, plus you might not believe them anyway because they're commercials. You just incorporate the commercial into the actual show. So people think, wow, that must be great. That kid's eating Fruit Loops, they must be a good cereal. And basically what that does is it fills your world with bullshit, with sales pitches masquerading as something that you should be taking for the truth. What did I just do? So it makes it difficult to know what you can trust, what you can believe. That's why we're here. Welcome to Forward Nation Radio. No, sorry, that's an example of what I was just talking about. Though we do like to believe that we are kind of an antidote to fake news. So you incorporate the ad into the show, the product itself. Fill the world with BS. How does this get done? How does your world get filled with lies? What are you up against? Even before Trump became the president, and we've entered uncharted territory for misinformation. Well, where you get your news? Most Americans get their news from one of six major multinational corporations. That's it. The way they present the news, through omission and commission, creates a reality that most people incorporate for themselves. By covering stories, by not covering stories, six major corporations that basically each divvy up together the world into six equal slices, and they present news to you. You turn on ABC News at 6 o'clock. ABC's owned by Disney. You think you're going to see stories about misconduct at Disney? You think you're going to see stories about a Disney theme park being sued for environmental degradation? You're not going to see those stories. They're not going to cover themselves. In the history of the world, nobody has ever called a press conference while robbing a bank. You don't draw attention to yourself when you're doing bad things. So ABC just doesn't cover it. ABC doesn't cover Disney. Occasionally, the heads of these companies have slipped and come out and basically said, it's not in our interest for ABC to cover Disney. But you say, wait a minute. But there's six of them. Okay, five if you don't count Fox. Can we just kind of throw them to the side for now? I mean, that's just all bullshit from beginning to end. It's just straight out propaganda. But you've got five. Well, why doesn't NBC run stories critical of Disney, its competitor? Seems like it would make sense until you think about it a little bit. If you're NBC, are you going to pick a fight with one of your corporate rivals? If you pick a fight with ABC, if you start covering on the evening news what ABC is doing wrong, what some major corporation is doing wrong, what are they going to do? How's ABC going to respond? They're going to cover the shit you're doing. Okay? Did you know that GE is still pumping toxic PCBs into the Hudson River? That might be the report they run. I don't know if they still are. I think some. They haven't quite cleaned it all up yet. So you just have a truce among all the major players. Just don't air each other's dirty laundry. We're all better off if we just don't pick this kind of a fight. So the news is bullshit for the most part. It's devoid of substance. You get 6 o'clock news, evening news shows, devoted to who threw their baby out the window, who got in a car accident, and what the weather's going to be. One of the local major network stations advertises its news show by talking about its weatherman. It should be embarrassing. This is news? This is a weatherman. I had my ultimate moment many years ago. You'll get an idea how many in a moment. At some point, I was in my home, and the TV was on, and the local news came on. I don't know what I was doing that I didn't turn the channel, because I don't watch the local. It's not worth my time. I don't watch the local news. And I didn't turn the channel. Local news was on. And it was one of these local news. It was NBC. They'll say it by name. It becomes part of the story in a minute. In NBC News, 6 o'clock news, I think. And it was like, okay, when we come back in a few minutes, we will have the world news roundup in 30 seconds. That's the news show. I mean, that's basically what it was. We'll cover the entire world, 30 seconds of news. And when they came back, and I was doing something that I couldn't turn this off, I hear this story that will always be iconic to me. Liz Smith was their entertainment reporter, and she had an entertainment report. And the Entertainment Report was a story about something funny that happened on the set of Friends. I'm not gonna go through the whole story. Matthew Perry lost a jacket. It cost him untold misery. Finally had to bite the bullet and buy a new jacket. And then he went to said Friends, and David Schwimmer was wearing a jacket that looked a lot like his, which he couldn't find to replace. And he said, "Oh my God, I had a jacket just like that. I want to replace it. I lost it. Where'd you get that jacket?" David Schwimmer said, "What do you mean? You lent it to me weeks ago." Okay, this story's going on, and I start out taking heavy objects and bashing myself over the head with them. Okay, but that was the story. I'm not making this up. That was it. That was the end of the story. That's a funny story. By the end of the day, I have silverware. I must do something. Jabbing it into my head. I'm going nuts. Okay, how can this? Some of you are too entertained by that picture. Even a couple of you I haven't already picked on. So, what's this all about? This is news? Of course, the answer to the story was it fills a couple of different voids here. First of all, it's not news, and it distracts the viewer from anything that might actually allow them to make a better decision about the way society should be run. It's got nothing to do with news. The other part of the story, of course, is, this is, gives you an idea how old the story is, they were still making new friends. Making new friends, that's nice. They were still making new episodes of Friends, and it was airing on NBC. So as we talked about before, it was a hidden ad within a news show where people listening go, "Ha, ha, ha, that's a funny story. Those guys, they're so cute. I have to watch that show." So you keep people away from any actual information, and at the same time, you manage to plug one of your own shows. And we call this news. Most of the morning news shows, much of the shows, are selling products that are owned by the corporate parent without ever telling you that they're doing that. That's omission and a little bit of commission. The commission, of course, the news, is the stories they cover, what they choose to cover, the storyline that they want to get out to you. I wonder sometimes why we make such a big issue. I still hear it. That people say, "Hillary Clinton was a terrible candidate for president." You don't run for president and attack a whole bunch of people and criticize a whole bunch of people. That's her famous basket full of deplorables comment. Right? It's still a big deal. Talking to a conservative friend of mine within the last week, and he brought that out. You don't make fun of people like that. No wonder she lost. It was all over the news, over and over. The story, of course, was that Hillary Clinton had referred to Trump supporters who are racists, xenophobes, misogynists. I forget what else. I think there was another category there. As belonging in a basket of deplorables. Anybody want to speak up for any of these people? Well, Professor Leventhal, Dave, you know, there are a lot of good racists out there, and I think they kind of get a bum rap sometimes. Okay? Homophobes. Did I say homophobes? That was another one on the list. The real quibble was she said 50%, and maybe it was only 48. Personally, I think it was more like 70. But that's going to be the big issue. Remember, some of you may know that during a debate in the Republican primary, Donald Trump said that he could take out a gun and shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, and his voters would still vote for him. Is what she said really worse than that? Is that respecting your voters? Is that speaking kindly of them? Not to me, but that didn't get any play. When it happened, it got some play. And then it was, but all we kept hearing about was Hillary Clinton's basket of deplorables. This was just the story over and over and over again. Basket of deplorables. And by the news media focusing on this all the time, on everything that possibly went wrong with her, then that became the image that people have. Hillary Clinton became the most hated politician in America. If we keep in this nostalgia craze, once all the fake news goes away, 5-10 years from now, Hillary will once again be one of the most popular politicians, or in this case, former politicians in America. Well, that'll be a real test of nostalgia. Of course, our nostalgia craze has already made us very nostalgic for President Obama. That didn't take very long. Okay. It goes beyond this even. Now, I think we've charted new territory, where stuff is just made up in the media. Lies are sent through social media and the internet. The internet had the possibility of changing a lot of this. The internet gave the opportunity to democratize information. This may not be the time to be talking about democracy in a favorable light. Although, I guess Trump really did lose in a democratic sense. The internet gave us the chance that we can spread information that doesn't get filtered through corporate America. And it was a real opportunity. Many of us looked very hopefully at the positive impact that the internet can have. We went through the Arab Spring, even, and everyone was celebrating Facebook and Facebook's supposed role in promoting the Arab Spring, pro-democracy uprisings in parts of the world that didn't have democracy. It was great times for Facebook. Boy, have things changed regarding Facebook in a few years, which is now still trying to live down the fact that by spreading lies the way it did, it helped Donald Trump become the president of the United States. Scaring the hell out of the entire world. This is where we've come to now with the internet. It gave the promise of possibly opening up information to people. So it had to be squelched. And unfortunately, while you can get real stuff on the internet, have I mentioned Forward Nation Radio? While you can get real stuff and real information on the internet is loaded with bullshit. Corporations have learned to put information out all over the internet that you can't trust. Hidden ads through the internet. You get emails, supposedly from some angry human being about something. It turns out the email's all bullshit. It's just made up. Please forward this to your friends. Aren't you angry about this? Al Gore was questioning the great patriot Colonel Oliver North, who warned him about Osama bin Laden. And he laughed at him. Democrats. Can't trust them. They're not going to keep America safe. The whole email is bullshit. Many of the emails you get are bullshit. It's bullshit from corporate America. Now we have new stuff. Now it's bullshit from Russia. We get Russian trolls going onto websites and posting comments, making believe they're somebody they're not. I'm a Bernie Sanders voter, and I can never vote for Hillary Clinton because she's awful, and she lies, and she hates America. Turns out, it's Ivan from St. Petersburg. Sometimes you can even tell by looking at the way it's written, but most of us just laugh that off as, well, you know, it's email. People aren't that scrupulous in how they write their emails. And we've entered an age where good luck to you. Good luck to you figuring it out. What was the famous statement? A lie travels halfway around the world before the truth gets out of the starting gate, or something, some version of that. Much of what you take for granted as being true was just made up, and there's no truth to it. So don't pack your bags for that Washington, D.C. pizza restaurant from which Hillary Clinton is running a child sex ring from a basement that doesn't exist. I know, how do you not laugh at this? It's hilarious. But it's dangerous. It's pathetic. It's a threat to every aspect of democracy. Sure, if you end up buying a Burger King hamburger and biting into it and saying, yeah, really not the greatest hamburger in the world. Sorry. Okay, you've thrown away a buck. But look what the misinformation has done for us now. Look at what it's resulted in. Look at the laughing stock that this country has become. I don't know the political leanings of everybody in this room. I hope I don't offend anybody, but I don't really give a shit if I do, actually. We're a laughing stock. We've just elected as President of the United States a man who is singularly unqualified and unsuited to that position. A guy who's a clown. As I noted in a prior show, without the big hands. Okay, but a guy, but who has the makeup of a clown. How do we end up here? We end up here because of the misinformation. And what do you do about this? How do you address this? I was asked on a recent show, what do we do about all the misinformation? How do we get involved? And the first thing you do is you get informed from places you can trust. You're critical, you're skeptical of things that you read. We have a problem from something called confirmation bias, where people are quick to accept information that they want to believe to be true, and just as quick to reject information that they don't want to be true. That's why we have Fox News. Anyone who's informed turns on Fox News for 5 minutes and pulls her hair out at the roots. How could people watch this shit and think and not laugh, not think this is a joke? And yet millions of Americans do. It's a lack of information. It's a lack of a basis of information from which you can make better decisions in the future. If you want to go through life ignorant, getting your news from the 6 o'clock NBC News, you will forever be the kind of person that informed, intelligent people look at and say, who invited her? Seriously, is she here for comic relief? She's an idiot. She says things that are ridiculous. She doesn't believe in science. Right? We've created a news world, a media world, where I made the joke before about going back before the Enlightenment, but it's really not funny. We dismiss science. I don't believe there's climate change. Why not? Because I could bring a fucking snowball into the U.S. Senate in February. That's true. That happened. Not only did it happened from the head of the Senate Environmental Committee. We're going to dismiss science because I pulled something better out of my ass, something I want to believe. If the corporations aren't behind what you read and hear and see, promoting their own interests. That's okay. They're promoting the interests of their advertisers. You can back up, you should back up and say this too. When you're on NBC News, you're going to run a report, you're not going to run a report critical of NBC or its parent company, which is, I think at this point, Universal, Comcast. Is that what we figured out the last time? Comcast and Universal. You're not going to, but you're also not going to run reports critical of anybody who buys all the ad time from your show, for your show. McDonald's spends billions of dollars in advertising every year. Do you think where they're spending that advertising money, they're running reports critical of McDonald's? McDonald's is going to threaten the news. They say you, and they have. I don't know if McDonald's has actually, but many companies have actually come out publicly, have said, if you run this report, we're going to pull our advertising. And the companies have pulled the report to not let it air. So you've got to be informed. You've got to find sources you can trust. You've got to be thoughtful enough to recognize bullshit sometimes when you see it. Because if you're a blank slate, you don't have the ability to make a thoughtful, critical decision. You're lost. Find sources you can believe in. What is some of the myth that gets peddled? Well, one of the most egregious examples of myths that are being peddled that people accept as true. We're seeing now in our government with the Trump tax plan. The Trump tax plan, which is in effect to give billions of dollars, or I'm sorry, trillions of dollars. An estimate I read this morning was $5 trillion it will cost the country. Mostly going to rich people. Something called supply-side economics or trickle-down economics. This was something advanced during the Reagan administration. It was bullshit at the time and everybody knew it. One of the leading conservatives, one of the founders of the modern conservative movement, a guy by the name of Irving Kristol, came out and said, we never thought much of its economic merits, but we understood immediately the political merits of this concept of supply-side economics. In other words, if you just give rich people more of your money, you will be better off. So let me suggest this as a way to illustrate this concept. Take out your wallets, take out your money, the cash. You can leave in the credit cards for now. I'll be back for them. Take out the cash and send it up to me. We got a Fox News viewer in the back. He's actually holding up his money. Okay. Thank you, Edgar. I don't want to take your last quarter. So give rich people more money and you will be better off. Let's say, so take out your money and give it to me. And I promise, I'm going to keep it. So go on, you do it, I'll take it. Doesn't even get to me. And thus we see the real, you can't see that on the camera. Someone was passing a few dollars forward before it got to me, someone else pocketed it. And thus, we've got a better metaphor for supply-side economics than I was even coming up with. Okay, take out your money and give it to me. I promise I'm doing this for you. Really, I'm doing this for you. Not for me. I know I'm getting the money, but I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for you. She even gave the money back. Almost nobody's handing me their money. Why not? Because it's blatantly stupid. Because you're not stupid. You're not reaching into your pocket and giving me your money on my promise, don't worry, I'm doing this for you. And yet, when we do this at a societal level, how do Americans respond?
Oh, sure. Where do I send my money? Absolutely. That's great. Let's give billionaires some more tax cuts, and I'm going to get richer? Great. I have an alternate proposal. Instead of giving rich people more money and tax breaks, here's a proposal I have for you. When you get rich, fabulously rich, rolling in money, I'm going to ask you to give a little bit more back. I'm going to ask you to pay a slightly higher tax rate, give a little bit more money back to help others follow in your footsteps. Money that we'll use to improve education, all kinds of things. That doesn't sound like much of a deal for me, for Professor Leventhal. Doesn't sound that great. But here's what I'm offering you in return. When you get rich, I almost lapsed into my Obama impersonation there. What's in it for me, Professor Leventhal? I don't know where to go with this anymore. Anyway, what's in it for me, Professor Leventhal? What's in it for me is I'm going to increase the likelihood that you're going to get rich in the first place. Would you take that deal? I'm going to ask you to give back more when you get really rich. In return, I'm going to make it more likely that you become really rich. Would you take that deal? Would you be willing, when you have $50 million, would you be willing to give a little bit more in return for a greater likelihood that you will have that money in the first place? And the answer from all of you should be an overwhelming absolutely. But of course, your response will only be absolutely up until what time? I keep asking questions, but they have to all be rhetorical questions, I guess. Only until you get rich. Once you get rich, all bets are off. I did it all myself. You didn't help me. Why should I give you any money? But tax dollars paid for public education that trained you and your workers. It paid for the internet that allowed you to get rich. It paid for the roads that your trucks travel on, the U.S. Navy that comes and rescues your ships when they get taken over by pirates, the airports your planes land in, the ports your ships drive up into. By investing in America, we improve the possibility that you will all get rich. The one positive thing that Donald Trump ran on was an investment in infrastructure, which we have left lacking. The one campaign promise that so far he has made absolutely no effort to fulfill is to spend money on infrastructure. But we will give $5 trillion worth of tax cuts to make sure that most people don't have the means to challenge the people who are already rich and just got richer. If you think that what this country needs is to give more money to billionaires, that where your concerns should be is that wealthy people sometimes have it a little too tough, then I'd put it to you that you spend too much time watching Fox News. Thanks. I think we're going to go to some questions. We ready to go to some questions? I'm going to open it up to the audience for some questions. Hi, is your name really Melissa or is it Elizabeth? Because there's some confusion. It's an inside joke.
With the impending French elections and the rise of the populist movement, do you think the world is moving towards Is everything as bad as it seems, or is the media dramatizing and focusing on these issues excessively?
Thank you. I actually love that question. Do I think that the media is focusing on this issue, this rise in right-wing populism excessively? Understand the last time we had this kind of rise in right-wing populism led to World War II, the Holocaust, and all kinds. No, I don't think the media is focusing on this excessively. I think the media is not focusing on this enough, and I think that this is a threat to civilization and the very basics of civilization. So yeah, I think it's worth talking about. Let's hope it doesn't happen, but if it happens, the consequences are going to be so catastrophic that we really need to be talking about it. Do I think that we are moving in a positive direction? Yes, actually I do. On the other hand, do I think that we are moving in a negative direction? I think that as well. I think these are remarkable times. I think the United States, the world, is basically a plane flying in opposite directions, full speed at the same time. I think it's remarkable. There is so much, as miserable as I often sound on my show, there is so much that should be hopeful, that should give people hope right now. Young people today, some of whom are in this room, show more interest in helping others, the world, a positive outcome, consideration for other people. For the first time in my lifetime, not only is liberal not a dirty word among young people, socialism isn't even a dirty word among young people. Talk to young people and I say, as I did the other day in class, do you think that every child in America should be guaranteed a basic education, 3 nutritious meals a day, health care? Sorry, I had to whisper that one. Health care! And the response, of course, people, everybody in America deserves that, at least. And maybe occasional baseball tickets. But and I said, of course, you know, congratulations, you're all socialists. So I think there's tremendous positive movement in so many respects. You know, the Trump phenomenon is scary as all hell, because in part of the people who've been celebrating ever since that election, which causes me the most consternation of anything. The neo-Nazis, the racists, the white supremacists, the misogynists, who since November 8th of 2016 are the happiest people on the planet. Drives me nuts. But to be fair, they've lost. They've lost. And maybe there's hope that these are the death throes of a bunch of primitives that know they've lost. A few years ago, when there was a lawsuit being brought in California against anti-same-sex marriage laws, in favor of same-sex marriage, the conventional wisdom in America was, you're too early, we're not ready for this. By the time the case was decided, overwhelmingly in favor of the pro-same-sex marriage people, a year or two later, it was happening all across America. Okay, we not only most of America take gay rights. We're talking about transgendered people as if they're people, which would never have happened in the past. So I think this is just remarkable times that we are going full speed ahead in opposite directions. The concern, of course, that they're basically going to rip the world apart, that won't hold. But maybe the people going in the wrong direction are few enough in numbers that they'll ultimately get overwhelmed. So this is what's going on with the French election everywhere else in Europe. Who's winning? Which direction are we going to sort of go in? And if the populists lose, then people will say we dodged a bullet. Of course, everyone's feeling pretty good about it right now, just like 2 weeks before the American presidential election 2016, we were feeling pretty good about the fact that we weren't going to elect an absolute jackass as president of the United States. So good luck with that. I hope that answered your question. Probably way at length. Thanks for your question.
Hi, what's your name and where are you from?
I'm David and I'm from Queens.
Good name.
And what's your question?
So here's my question. Michael Moore recently predicted that President Trump will be impeached during his quote unquote second term. To what extent do you think he may be right? And why?
First of all, I love Michael Moore. Okay, seriously, I understand the media spin on Michael Moore. But his movies contain more truth in them than a lifetime of watching Fox News. And I think that you should have a Michael Moore film festival one weekend where you've got not a lot to do. And watch all his movies because I do think they are tremendously thought-provoking and enlightening. So, Michael, with that plug, you are invited to call in and be interviewed at Forward Nation Radio anytime you would like. Day or night, we'll figure out a way to work it out. I truly think the man is a godsend. God, I hope that idiot's wrong. If Trump gets a second term, we're in a lot of trouble. If he lasts that long, I don't know how long it would be into a second term. I don't know where the quote came from. we're in a lot of trouble if he gets into a second term. As you know, we've got at least one liberal Supreme Court justice who's pretty old, and we don't know how much longer she can stay on the court. If Donald Trump gets to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the United States Supreme Court, this country will be moving backwards for a long time, at least as far as the Supreme Court is concerned, and the Supreme Court matters a whole lot in this country. What do I mean by moving backwards? I mean that some of you presumably can not only kiss away your right to get an abortion, perhaps, by the way, all of you may kiss away your right to get an abortion. It's not necessarily just overturning Roe v. Wade. They could actually ban abortion and allow that to happen. Many of you will lose access to contraceptives. You won't be able to buy birth control pills. Anyway, if he goes that long, we're in a lot of trouble. I'm not sure what he's going to do worse in his second term that he sort of hasn't already done. And I guess the only thing I think is that probably what motivates Michael Moore is that he figures that in 2018 and 2020, the Republicans are going to get their asses kicked and they're going to lose Congress. And then what's going to happen is we're going to start to see actual investigations of the misconduct that's going on in the Trump administration, and then this stuff is going to go to light. That's, as I think about your question, I'm assuming that that's what he was talking about, that it's going to take a while until someone actually wants to investigate this administration, and that's going to have to be when Democrats take control. So maybe it's an optimistic view that the Democrats are going to win 2018, 2020, although if Donald Trump's the president after 2020, the Democrats didn't win anything. So I find that unlikely. I hope not, let's put it that way. I hope he's, if it's appropriate, I hope he's impeached now. Mostly I hope he becomes basically irrelevant. Thanks for the question, David.
Can I have the next question, please? Hi.
My name is Manuel, I'm from Brooklyn. Good afternoon,
Professor. Hello, Manuel.
Recently we've seen an abundance of racially motivated violence. What are your feelings on this? Do you believe it to be the result of the beliefs and actions of our new commander-in-chief, or the natural emergence of a long-standing racism in American culture?
Yeah. Again, yeah to both. Do I think that Donald Trump's rhetoric matters? Yes. As I indicated before, I guess I got a little bit ahead of the question, not intending to. I think that the Trump election has clearly emboldened the worst people on the planet. It really bothers me. I woke up on November 9th. Actually, I didn't wake up on November 9th because I just got out of my drunken stupor at some point. I took my head out of the toilet bowl. But on November 9th,
I thought people I know, like, respect, are really unhappy now. Really, really unhappy. And the lowest form of pond scum on the planet are the happiest people on the planet. That drives me nuts. It's just, that's terrible. It's awful. It kills me that these people are celebrating and are happy. So I don't think there's any question that the Trump victory emboldened these people to come out of the closet. That being said, there are some sort of mixed messages about what's happening with the amount of hate, crime, violence. And unfortunately, it has always existed in America. It's always existed in the world. Whenever economic times get bad, it gets worse. Because people need somebody to blame, and they're going to lash out at people who look different than themselves. So, and again, we've gone through the worst economy worldwide that we've had in three quarters of a century. So I think that a lot of these things are all combining. Again, my hope is you hear about these incidents, and maybe there's something good that we're hearing about these incidents, and most of the country and most of the world is united in thinking the people who are doing this are shit. And maybe there's something good to come from that. But we've clearly emboldened the wrong people. And hopefully they need to be stuffed back in a box at some point. That box need to be dropped at the bottom of the ocean. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say box? I guess I should have said basket. Yeah, basket. Sorry, I blew that one. It took me a little while, but that's what I think, man. Well, did I answer the question? I think that's... Thank you. Thank you for the question.
Hi.
What's your name? Where are you from?
Good evening, Chantal.
What's your question? How does the attack on Syria affect the U.S.?
How does the attack on Syria affect the U.S.? Interesting question. I guess, again, it's sort of a couple of components there. One is what's going on in Syria. Is it going to change what's going on in Syria? Is it going to lead to fewer chemical weapons? I'm not sure how much of that really affects the U.S., though we certainly should give a damn because innocent people are suffering a terrible fate. And I'm not sure. I don't know. Is it possible that bombing the shit out of Syria will make them more reluctant to attack their own people? Maybe. Of course, a president who doesn't seem quite so enamored, if not actually beholden to Russia, Syria's patron, might also have helped. But it's possible that it will. What do I think in the long run it will mean for America? I don't, you know, this comes down to the basic question. How do you deal with your enemies? Do you blow them up? Or do you try to otherwise neutralize them? Maybe in some cases reason with them. Do you try to apply the law to get rid of them? Or do you blow things up? I tend to believe in the latter thing more, especially when the enemy is terrorism. Blowing them up doesn't necessarily seem like much of a threat. Dropping bombs on Muslim countries doesn't necessarily endear us to the Muslim community that we need to battle the terrorists, that we need to battle ISIS, and Al-Qaeda and all the other terrorists that we're fighting. So I don't see how that, in that sense, I think it's worse. I think this has to be a wonderful recruiting tool for ISIS to say, look at all the people that America just killed, the innocent Muslims that America just killed in Syria and other places in the world. But as far as what the results are going to be, whether it's going to lead to any... Syria appears, unfortunately, at least at this point in time, to be kind of a lost cause. Assad is going to stay. Russia's still behind him. And we're going to have to sort of tinker at the margins to the extent that we can. And I don't know what impact that's going to have on that. I don't think it helps us battle terrorists, though. I think it makes things worse. Thanks for the question. It's as good as I could do on that one. Thank you.
Kelsey, you're up.
And batting fifth. And
as Julia said, my name is Kelsey, and I'm from Queens. And my question
Hi, Chelsea.
Is, what would it take or what steps need to be achieved in order for Donald Trump to be impeached?
He needs to be convicted by the United States Senate of a high crime or misdemeanor. I mean, that's the constitutional term. What does that mean? Practically, what does it mean? He's either got to do something that pisses off Republicans, and his tax proposal is not going to go there. He's going to make good friends with Republicans on that one, because that's the thing that they most agree on, although there are elements of his tax proposal that they're not going to agree on, which will probably get changed anyway. So what's it going to take for him to become impeached? Practically speaking, the United States House of Representatives has to vote articles of impeachment against the president. Then it would go to the United States Senate, where they would, in effect, conduct a trial. And if he is then found guilty in the Senate, he would be forced from office. The number of American presidents who have been impeached? 2. 1 for having sex. Okay, 2. And neither one of them, by the way, was convicted in Senate. So nobody has ever been impeached out of office. Now, Richard Nixon was about to be impeached. He would have been the first. His own political party had made it clear that he was gone. So he had to resign, the only American president ever forced from office under threat of impeachment. What do I think is going to have to happen? I mean, obviously, the first thing that's going to have to happen is the Democrats are going to have to take over Congress, because the Republicans are not going to do this. I don't think they're going to do it even if he pisses them off. Because remember, aside from anything else, Republicans are big on tit for tat. Like, if a Republican president does something bad, you could bet that the next Democratic president, the Republicans are going to find something and say, you did the same thing. You did it too. You did it too. So Richard Nixon lied. Well, you had Bill Clinton. We impeached her. We're about to impeach a Republican president. We'll find a Democratic president we can impeach, and they're gonna file through. I don't see them going 0-2 basically on presidents who are forced from office. I don't see the Republicans wanting to do this. Trump would have to do something really bad to get them upset, or whatever information comes to light has to be so egregious that the Republicans have absolutely no choice. Obviously, if some evidence comes out about serious collusion with Russia to change the 2016 presidential election, give it to Trump. And that Trump knew about it and orchestrated it, under those, maybe the Republicans will have no choice. But of course, they're busy trying to make sure that even if that happened, no one will ever find out about it, so it doesn't matter. I guess 3 months ago I would have said, that's ridiculous, absolutely not. With what's going on with Russia, I mean, who knows if they find something that they just can't ignore. So thanks for that, but don't get your hopes up. Thank you. I think I'm being told either goodbye or I think we're, 5? 5 more minutes. Do I have any more questions?
Oh, well, I've been designated the honor of asking someone's question.
Too bad. I thought I was going to break out into my rendition of Feelings for 5 minutes.
All right, so Alice from Rainbow Park asks, if we implemented Bernie Sanders' plan of redistributing the wealth, at what point would we stop and say, now we're all equal?
We'll never say now we're all equal, and we shouldn't say now we're all equal. I don't think we should be all equal. Bernie Sanders doesn't think we should be all equal. Some people should have more money than other people. Socialists in America aren't communists. I'm not saying there aren't any, but it's really hard to find a communist these days. Communism failed as an economic system. Maybe it wasn't tried real well, but it's got problems on it. There aren't many communists out there. What there are, Bernie Sanders represents and speaks for, and I consider myself a socialist. That doesn't mean we should all have the same amount. Aside from anything else, I don't want to work that hard.
I really don't. You want to work harder than me? You should have more than me. I'm fine with that. My first year as a lawyer, a friend of mine who was also a first-year lawyer at my law firm, billed more hours than anybody else at the firm. This was a 150-lawyer firm. And this guy in his first year billed more hours than anybody else. He went to the firm, make a long story short, he went to the firm afterwards and said, I billed more hours than anybody else in the firm. Can I get a little bonus or something? And the firm got back to him and said, no. We think that it'll cause too much resentment among your fellow lawyers. And I said to him, you want me to go in and talk to them for you? Because they should be giving you more money. You billed 2,500 hours. I billed 1,900. I'll take the 600 hours. You can have the money. That's fine. I'm happy to make that choice. I don't think we should all have the same. Some people, look, even luck, which unfortunately is, you know, a lot of the reason I believe in a progressive tax system, sharing the wealth from the wealthy. One of the reasons people are wealthy is they got lucky. They were born at the right time. They were healthy. They didn't get a brain tumor. They didn't get cancer. They had probably white parents, grew up middle class, got a good, whatever. A lot of it was luck. And I think that the lucky have an obligation to help the unlucky, but I don't think we should be equal. Some people should have more than others. It's just enough is enough. We've got something like 21% of United States children living in poverty. I wish I had prepared for this. I don't remember the number of children living in New York City homeless shelters every night. It's many thousands. I don't remember what the number is. It should be unacceptable. How do we accept this? There's just enough is enough. We've got billionaires, billionaires. When I was younger, people aspired to be a millionaire. Now, being a millionaire doesn't get you into Mar-a-Lago. You're the riffraff they're keeping out. You now have to be a billionaire to be worth it. It's crazy. When 21% or 22% of American children are living in poverty, how many American children don't get 3 square meals a day? How is this acceptable? The healthcare thing. Why isn't there more anger? The Republican healthcare proposal to take healthcare away from 24 million people? We're the richest country in the world. We're the only one that can't afford to give healthcare to all of our citizens. What kind of shit are we? We shouldn't all have the same, but enough is enough. And that's what Bernie Sanders believes. What we believe, as I sort of indicated before, there is a basic level of necessities that everybody in America should be entitled to. Children should not be going hungry. Period, the end. It's America. You should have 3 meals. You should have a good education in a safe school where you're not worried about being shot. You should be able to go to a doctor if you get sick. Do we really have to talk about this? Do we have to debate this? What kind of false media world creates people who think that this is okay? We don't think everybody should be the same. We just think enough is enough. Like, this is just, how much inequality would we actually tolerate? And that there should be a lot of things in America that are not considered luxury items. They're considered basic necessities to which every American has a basic human right. That's where I do, and that still sort of doesn't answer the question. What is that point? I don't know. I'm not writing the legislation, but it's sure as hell not where we are now. We need to be better. We need to be more decent. People basically don't get to own so much of the planet while other people have no place to live. Are there any? I think I answered the question somewhere in there.
We don't have time for any more questions.
We don't have time for any more questions. I was just getting warmed up. Okay, thank you very much for joining us. Stay informed. Thanks for the enthusiasm. I'd like to, before we go away, 2 things. The introductions are coming first, before we talk about why we do this. Is that, we're good? Do the why, okay. I was asked before, they thought that we should talk a little bit about why I do this. Some of you might have noticed I have a couple of young children running around here that I don't get to spend as much time with as I would like. Sometimes I spend more time with them than I would like, but that's... No, I don't get to spend as much time with them as I would like. I don't get as much sleep as I would like. Why do we do this? The producer, Damien, whom you've all met and will meet again in a moment, came to me several months ago after the election and said, basically, we're fucked and somebody needs to do something about it. How do you feel about getting involved? I think I didn't understand the extent of the commitment that I was making was part of it. But I mentioned my children before. They deserve to grow up in a world better than what we're giving them right now. All of your future children deserve to grow up in a better world than we're giving them right now. When I'm on my deathbed, I want to be able to hold my head up. Well, if I'm on my deathbed, maybe I can't hold my head up. But figuratively speaking, I want to be able to say I did what I could. I'm not responsible. I tried. And not have those kind of regrets. Growing up Jewish in America, you look back, maybe you don't have to grow up Jewish, but certainly I grew up Jewish. So you look at World War II, you look at the Holocaust, and you think, what kind of animals let this happen? The people who let this happen through their ignorance should be sent to prison somewhere. The people who actually affirmatively made this happen should have a hell of a lot worse happen to them. And I don't want to be that person. Whatever. Okay, thanks again. I'd like to, since we're live and we're all here, and the work that the people on this team do every day is extraordinary, I actually have the easiest job on the Forward Nation radio team. Our producer, Damien Hardeen, is the brains behind the outfit. Not necessarily the hair, but the brains. And responsible for everything that happens with this show. Our other team members, and I'm not going to say their titles because it's late. I can't remember anything. Because there's not, in order of where they're standing, Nicholas Brell, Julia Adamo, and Carolyn Balkum. You should all take a bow because the praise should belong to you. Now, if you'd like to ask them any questions, I'm out of here.
Everybody, thank you so much. Let's give it up for David Leventhal. All right. Thank you so much, everybody, and have a great night.